Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Welcome everyone to this podcast from the European Academy of Neurology about headache. There will be four episodes, and we'll start with how to diagnose headache. And my name is Rolf Fronsek. I'm a neurologist from Leiden University Medical Center in the Netherlands. And we're here together now with Dimos Mitsikostas from the University of Athens, Greece. And my co-host will now introduce himself and ask the first question.
So my name is Theodoros Mavridis. I'm a scientific research associate neurologist at Aegean Hospital. And Professor Mitsikostas, let me start with the first question. What are primary and secondary headache disorders and how can we diagnose them?
Thank you very much, both of you, for the opportunity you are giving me today to share with you various issues which I believe are of great importance in the differential diagnosis and the diagnostic test that a doctor should carry out to help a patient suffering from headache. First of all, the headaches are divided into two broad categories. In those which are due to a disorder expressed by symptom headache, and these are the secondary headaches, as well as those where the headache itself is the basic manifestation of the disease, and these we are calling them primary headaches. According to the most recent international headache classification disorder published back in 2018, all these categories of headaches are diagnosed with very specific diagnostic criteria. Typically, primary headaches have a diagnosis exclusively phenomenological. That is, only the symptoms, characters, intensity, and duration of the specific features of the headaches are solely responsible for the diagnosis of a primary headache disorder. Therefore, a sophisticated and detailed medical history is required for headache diagnosis. Sometimes, the headache can be a manifestation of a serious condition which is life-threatening for our patient. In this case, the doctor should be able to recognize those characteristics that raise the increased alertness, the red flags, to make the correct diagnosis and protect the patient from a bad outcome. In the events that there are these famous red flags, the doctor should proceed to a paraclinical examination as this has been specified in detail in a consensus article published by the European Headache Federation a few years ago in 2015 specifically. We state there that features that represent a warning for a possible underlying disorder causing the headache are 1. New onset headache, 2. Change in previously stable headache pattern, 3. Headache that abruptly reaches the peak level, 4. Headache that changes with posture, headache awakening the patient or precipitating by physical activity or Valsalva maneuver. First onset headache in a person older than 50 years. Neurological symptoms or signs, close or recent trauma, fever, seizures, history of malignancy, history of HIV or COVID-19. A recently infection and prior history or stroke or intracranial bleeding. What I'm trying to say, and I'm closing the answer, is that we have to pay very much attention when we are taking the medical history in a patient who is presenting with headache.
Oh, yeah, thank you for this advice and also for these red flags. And very important. I think also in my experience, some patients you see in a more acute setting on the emergency department, but there are also these headache outpatient clinics where you see patients that have been suffering for headache for a really long time. And that's a lot of difference between the two, but still important to keep this in mind. So my next question is, if you're an outpatient clinic and you take the headache history, do you have any specific advice how to tackle this? What's the best way to do this first consultation?
As I said before, taking a detailed history is of paramount importance for the diagnosis of headache, whether it is a primary or secondary one. So in this context, the doctor should clarify how a headache starts. That is, how quickly it peaks, which is exactly located the head area, whether it is deep, sharp, pressing, or pulsating, and what intensity it has. I suggest asking the patient to identify a number from 0 to 10 to accurately specify the intensity of head pain. Additional important information that helps a lot in diagnosing headache is the way in which the patient treats this pain, which medication he is or she is using. With this medication, does headache relieves? And how, what is the speed of the action of the medication? It is also of great importance whatever the intensity or else headache characters change with the body position. The frequency of headache should be accurately determined, and a good way is to ask our patient how many days with any kind of headache he has within a month approximately. Ask the patient to clarify whether he can recognize more than one type of headache. Very often, in the same patient coexists two different primary headaches, or even more rarely, a primary along with a secondary one. The number of pills that patient consumes to treat the headache's attack should also be determined accurately. That is, how many days a month the patient consumes any medication for the symptomatic relief of headache. It is also of great importance in taking the history to mention previous headache preventative treatments by other physicians and the outcome of those treatments. Did these treatments help or not, and how much exactly? What side effects did they have? Experience the patient. What other comorbidities are present in the patient in front of us? Going back to the treatments he had before, would the patient try once again such a treatment and why? And did any treatment stop in the past due to the adverse events? All these are very important elements, not only for the diagnosis, but also for the therapeutic decision. That is how to choose a new treatment once the diagnosis has already been decided. In this data on headaches in the family should also be sought. In other words, there are other members of the same family who have similar or different headaches. And the best way to determine the frequency of headaches is the headache diary. There is no doubt on this. And if the patient does not have this headache diary with him or her the first time, he should definitely have in the follow-up in order to accurately evaluate the effectiveness, but also the safety and tolerance of the treatment that we have been proposed in the meantime. Therefore, to answer your question, keeping the headache diary is the most important tool. In other words, there are other members of the same family who have similar or different headaches. And the best way to determine the frequency of headaches is the headache diary. So, and in the case the patient does not have a headache diary the first time he appears, then definitely he should have it in the follow-up in order to accurately evaluate the effectiveness, but also the safety and tolerance of the treatment that will have been proposed in the meantime. Therefore, to answer your question, keeping the headache diary is the most important tool, not only for diagnosing, but also for monitoring treatment. And it is also a very important tool for monitoring the patient compliance with the treatment agreed with his doctor.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Mitsikostas. It's very important, as you said, the headache diary, not only for primary, but also for secondary headache disorders. And as we know, many of secondary headache disorders also need treatment, and we can monitor the efficacy of the treatment with the headache diary. Now, I want to focus more on secondary headaches. As you mentioned, we should order some paraclinical tests if we have red flags. What would be those tests? Would it be an MRI or some lab tests specifically?
Right. The most common paraclinical tests we have to perform in order to secure our diagnosis or to make our differential diagnosis clear is to perform neuroimaging. And in this case, the most common test is the MRI scan. On the other hand, the other paraclinical test is definitely the lumbar puncture to measure the pressure of CSF first, and second, to make an analysis to see whether there is an infection or not. Those are the most common tests we may suggest in a case we have the suspicion of secondary headache in front of us.
And then the follow-up question, I think that starts, of course, what you said, the clinical history. But then also then what we do in the consultation room often is the physical examination, neurological examination. So could you tell us what are the most important points in the physical examination when seeing a headache patient, and maybe also the role of fundoscopy?
Absolutely agree to see whether we have any changes within the optic disc, and to proceed with a lumbar puncture. But in most cases, we need a combination of several tests and of several neurological signs to reach the right diagnosis. But definitely that should be another examination that very often we have to perform. Yeah, absolutely agree.
And any laboratory tests?
Well, from those tests, apart from blood tests, like the general exam, like CRP and other tests to exclude any recent infection, those are the most common that we need just to see whether there is infection. Or then for the case of a chronic headache, we also have to proceed tests with autoantibodies or with specific sonar tests to clarify whether there is an angiitis in an older patient with first onset headache after the 50 years old. So for the case, we have to divide patients into particular subpopulations grouped by age, and starting with the age of 50 and older, then a first onset headache is always an alarm in this particular subpopulation. And we have to be careful to perform all the paraclinical testing, starting with MRI and then with blood tests.
Okay. That was a very nice insight about how to handle the diagnosis of primary and secondary headache disorders. I just want to go back to Rolf's insight on this matter about the how to make a clinical examination. And sometimes we can encounter patients that have, let's say, some autonomic symptoms that may be worrisome to some, but they may be a part of a primary headache disorders. Can you tell us more about the autonomic dysfunction in special primary headache disorder?
Thank you for this question. Definitely migraine with or without aura followed by medication overuse headache are the most common headache disorders that push patients to headache outpatient clinics or emergencies. Immediately after, the most common primary headache is, of course, the cluster headache, which very often is difficult to treat, and even more often it is underdiagnosed. A headache which is strictly centered around one eye of the patient, steadily awakens the patient at the same time of night, which is very intense and lasts less than 3 hours, are the principal features with which the cluster headache is presented. To this should be added the symptoms from the autonomic nervous system that include redness of the eye, rhinorrhea, lacrimation, and blepharoptosis, altogether lasting from 15 to 180 minutes, no more, no less. Attacks may occur from 1 up to 6 times a day during the boot period. And this is exactly the case of cluster headache. Other primary headaches falling into the same category of autonomic cephalalgias may also appear, but that are rare conditions.
And maybe then it's a good question to ask, if you have autonomic, if a patient has autonomic symptoms and it's not clearly cluster headache, in what way is it an alarm, or should we be careful because or can it, even migraine also have autonomic features? How specific are the autonomic features?
Absolutely agree. In this consensus paper, we suggest, we recommend for the first appearing cluster headache-like feature to perform at least an MRI or even an MRA. So autonomic features, ipsilateral autonomic features, are always an alarm, a red flag. We have to perform testing. We have to be very careful when we are examining the patient. And apart from that, if everything looks fine without any additional neurological signs, and patients does not fulfill the criteria of the cluster headache, then we should perform a trial with indomethacin to see whatever the headache respond to this treatment, and then follow the guidelines to see whatever we are facing an indomethacin-responded autonomic cephalalgia.
Theodore, do you have a final question?
It's more of a comment, not a question. Thank you again, Professor Mitsikostas, for your insight on this matter. And tell us one or two main key points that a physician should keep when examining a patient that comes to the ER or even at the private office with a headache.
The first thing I should consider to examine and see how headache develops in the beginning, not years ago, but just that attack, the very particular attack, how it developed. This is very important, and also to investigate the context of this headache attack. Those two are the most important elements I should consider to take into account for a physician who is dealing with headache sufferer.
I think that's a very clear and good advice. thank you for all these insights and also pointing us towards also people that have been listening. Look at the official criteria, look at the guidelines for the European Headache Federation if you want to know more. I think this concludes our first episode. So thanks again, Professor Mitsikostas. And well, for the audience, we hope to that you listen to us again in the second episode. So thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you all so much.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EAN Cast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.